25th, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 563 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I do apologize for the delay. Again, it's been a couple weeks since we did a podcast. We are back. We have weekly shows for the next 3 weeks. Unfortunately, if you love Allison Futter, and of course you love Allison Futter, you will not hear her for a couple of weeks because we have a couple shows we need to get going. Some news going on, so lots of stuff happening. So first off, before we get into that, I encourage everyone, if you are a if you listen to this podcast or you like baseball, or there's all, who am I to reach inside the human mind to tell you what you like or don't like? But if you have an MLB TV subscription, which I hope you do, I am a part of the MLB Plus show, which is basically a weekly show. Every time there's an MLB Network game, you can go on MLB TV and go to the MLB Plus game of the day. This week it is Dodgers at Mets on Friday night. If you're not in the New York area or Los Angeles area, if you're in Los Angeles area, you can, you know, because if you're not in either area, you can watch that game. You'll see me, Mike Petriello, Fernando Perez, just all sorts of people doing what we hope is it's a Statcast-driven broadcast, but it's really just hopefully a smart broadcast. So I'm actually having a lot of fun with it. I'm getting a little better at it. I'm having a lot of fun. So I recommend Friday night, go if you have an MLB TV subscription and you don't live in the two largest cities in the United States, watch MLB Plus, Dodgers Mets. You will hear me and Mike Petriello and others describing the game. Now, we have the two items that we need to get to before we get into this week's podcast. Number one, this week's podcast is actually the first of two before we get to Allison Futter. Next week, I talked to Ezra Edelman, who is the director of OJ Made in America, the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary that's actually going to be – was actually got an Oscar run, so it's going to be up for an Oscar nomination this year. It is 7.5 hours. It is brilliant. It is unbelievably good. It's on June 11th. You'll be able to watch it on ABC and ESPN. It'll run throughout that week. I've already taped this podcast. I talked to Ezra in New York last week. He is an awesome guy, incredibly intelligent, very serious, which I thought I really enjoyed that about him. There's a seriousness to him that I obviously don't have because I'm an idiot, but he has a serious intelligence that I had a very great time talking to him, and the movie is going to blow your damn mind. So he is on next week, which is why we don't have an Allison Futter podcast that week. He'll be on the week after Memorial Day. This week, however, we are going to preview the Copa America Centenario with Noah Davis. He's the deputy editor for American Soccer Now, as well as a freelance writer at all sorts of places. But here, we're going to talk to him about the Copa America. I am pretty excited, all told, for the Copa America. I am, as anyone that's read my stuff for a long time knows, I am irrationally exuberant about U.S. men's soccer. Why would this be any different? This is the great South American tournament they do every year, except this year, for the 100th anniversary, it is in America. So if you are in one of those cities, unlike me, where you can go watch some of those games, you should. It kicks off on June 5th with the United States against Colombia. So we are going to preview that with Noah Davis. You should follow him on Twitter at Noah E. Davis, N-O-A-H-E-D-A-V-I-S. I spelled that right. Yeah. So follow him on Twitter there. But we're going to preview the Copa America Centenario. Did you like my roll of the tongue there? And then we'll be back next week talking to Ezra Edelman, and then we'll be back with your regularly scheduled Allison Futter podcast. All right, as always, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a nice review on iTunes. It makes it easier for people to find the podcast. At least tell people the audio is better than it used to be. And drop me a line. I'm at WilliamFLeach@yahoo.com or leach@sportsonearth.com. Drop me a line anytime. And otherwise, enjoy this podcast, and hey, have a great Memorial Day. Be safe out there. All right, Noah, first off, thank you for coming on. I encourage everyone to listen to the American Soccer Now podcast, which is always shorter. It's about as it happens about as often as mine does, but it is is half as long as mine. Noah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so before we get in, we're talking about I always just say the Copa America. It's a Copa America Centenario. My ability to do a Latino accent is so poor that I tend to just say, this is the Copa America. Let's just go with that. So
I think that's easier.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious, walk us through briefly before we get into looking at the actual tournament and the actual U.S. team. For a while, this tournament appeared to be in a little bit of jeopardy in the wake of the Chuck Blazer. I just reviewed the new book about Chuck Blazer for the Wall Street Journal, so he's in my head right now. No, he's perpetually everywhere. I mean, he's a large man.
Of course. Big dude.
But there was a while that this tournament looked to be in a little bit of jeopardy. But I'm curious, now that it's here, do you feel like this is – the goal of this is always to bring this awesome South American tournament to the United States to kind of increase the excitement. Are you seeing that? Do you think this is ultimately turning out to be a good thing so far? Is the excitement level where we might have hoped it would be?
I think the goal is always to make as much money as you can. So that's right. Goal number one.
That's working.
Even with Chuck gone. But yeah, I think, you know, we're still a little early. I think the teams have just been announced, and it's hard to get excited about a tournament where you don't know who's going to play and everything. But I think it's building slowly, and I think, you know, when the promotion comes on TV and stuff like that, I think it's going to get people pretty excited about it. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the U.S. team first. This is a constant, ongoing debate. I'm kind of renowned for being irrationally exuberant about the U.S. soccer team. One of my highlights of my career was still being called one of the Marxist soccer supporters by the Federalists, which is actually, I don't even think, a necessarily bad sight, but for whatever reason, they decided they did not like my promotion of women's soccer last year. So I believe they're winning the World Cup every 4 years because I get so excited. Obviously, there's been a lot of frustration with Klinsmann, particularly in the wake of the Gold Cup. Where does everything stand? Does he need to do anything in this tournament, or is this all just come down to World Cup qualifying?
I mean, I think it mostly comes down to World Cup qualifying. I think, you know, if they lost all three games and didn't score a goal and looked terrible and there was some dissension in the ranks, you know, I think we'd be having the same conversation that we have every time they have a bad turnout. You know, it's just, is Klinsmann the right guy? I think at this point, you're far enough along in World Cup qualifying that his job is safe, at least through Russia 2018, as long as they qualify for the World Cup. So I don't think there is the pressure on him in that sense. I do think that he feels like he needs to get a good result. And I also think that with this tournament being in the U.S., with a lot of the U.S. players playing well for various clubs, you know, a lot of guys are scoring in Europe, guys in MLS are having good seasons in Major League Soccer. So I do think there's some potential. I was shocked yesterday. I was looking up the odds, and the U.S. is like an 8-1, you know, not, I don't know, underdog to win. But that, I mean, that seems very
high.
Very, very favorable to me.
Yes.
Yeah, I do not think that I would not put my money there. But, you know, I think they are like, it's Argentina 2-1, and then Brazil, I think, is 9-2. And then the third one is the U.S. is tied with another couple teams at 8-1. You know, I think home field advantage is a huge thing in soccer. In the U.S., it's always a little shaky because there are so many countries that have big groups, big supporting groups here, living here already. So, you know, it's never going to be – it's not like England playing in England when the U.S. plays in the U.S. But I do think there will be excitement, and I do think this is a team that certainly has the potential to do well. Jurgen Klinsmann has come out and said that his goal is the semifinals. And, you know, I mean, I think that's a reasonable goal. If, you know, they should – their group is not great. They should get out of their group. I think then you're looking at – if they don't win their group, they're looking at a probable matchup against Brazil in the quarterfinals, which is a tough game. But, yeah, the U.S. can certainly make some noise in this tournament.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into the groups in a second. I definitely want to talk specifically about the team. Altidore is out. It seems like he's perpetually always kind of either hurt or about to get hurt, which has kind of been the bugaboo his whole career. Does that affect them a lot with the way they're playing? Are they still – because the problem, you know, I was at that Gold Cup game in Atlanta, so, you know, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm personally responsible. I was joking with a friend of mine here in Athens that was at that game as well, that they're never coming back to Atlanta again.
Right.
After that game, they're it's going to require the MLS team starting and then going, because that was pretty gross. So certainly the team seems to be in a bit of flux. This is the ongoing argument about Klinsmann is, listen, maybe he's having some success in some of the lower levels and he's maybe changing the culture a little bit, but we're not seeing as much on the higher levels. There also seems to be some technical questions that people have about him. What is the current state of this roster? Is it coming together? Has you know, he always talked about having this, he was going to change the style of the U.S. team. Are we seeing that? Is there reason to be hopeful, regardless of how they do in this tournament or how and so on? Is there reason to be hopeful, at least on regardless of what he's doing in the lower levels, about what he's doing for this team. What should we get excited about? Or is it all just Pulisic? Should we just be excited about him?
I think there's a lot of stuff there. I mean, first of all, let's start with Altidore. His injury is ill-timed, unfortunately. Again, he's going to miss a major tournament. He went down in the first game of the World Cup with a hamstring injury. Seemed like he was getting better. Talked a lot about losing a lot of weight and getting leaner, and then went down with another hamstring injury. So he's done. That's too bad. I mean, he is, a guy you put in as your starting forward on that team. I think a guy like Bobby Wood, who had a great season in the second division Bundesliga and just got transferred to another Bundesliga team, to Hamburg, he can slide in. He does things a little bit differently than Altidore. He's kind of not quite the stout body that Altidore has, not quite the traditional target forward. But, you can talk me into a world where Bobby Wood and Clint Dempsey are playing off each other pretty well. And, it's a different game than when Dempsey and Altidore are in there together. But, those two guys up top can be pretty good. I think I'm a perpetual optimist about the U.S. team. I think it's more fun to look at them, through rose-colored glasses at them than to get angry all the time. Because if you want to get angry, you certainly can get angry all the time. I think there's a lot of talent on this team. I think Michael Bradley is a very good central midfielder. Jermaine Jones, for all his faults, he certainly rises to the occasion in big games. He was one of the best players of the World Cup in 2014. So I think it's there. I have some questions about the back line. John Brooks has, to me, he had a great season in the Bundesliga. He's a central defender. I don't know if he's quite ready to put together 90 minutes or, an entire tournament worth of great games. So that's a little concerning to me, but he's certainly a much better player than he was 12 months ago. So that's good. Jeff Cameron and Matt Beisler have both World Cup experience at center back as well. And so, those guys can play. DeAndre Yedlin was at Sunderland in the EPL all season and at right back, and he has just gotten phenomenally better in the last 12 months. He's still a little bit of a liability defensively, but he's gotten much, much better. And then Fabian Johnson, I think he's the single most talented guy on this team. He's probably the best left back, best left midfielder, and best right midfielder on the team. He looks like he's going to play left back as well. So, that's a pretty good back four at a tournament like this. You want your defense to be stout and know what they're doing. So, I think they certainly can do well. I don't think that the world is falling. I think this is probably, on paper, one of the single most talented 23-man groups the U.S. has had from 1 through 23. So that's certainly something to say. But the thing about the Jurgen Klinsmann teams is a lot of times it seems like they are worse than the sum of their parts. So if they can figure it out this summer, I think they can do some damage.
And are we going to see Pulisic on? I think he's on the roster. Are we going to see him play?
I think we are going to see Christian Pulisic, who's the Borussia Dortmund prospect. He's 17 years old. He turns 18 in September, which is terrifying.
Yes, it is. He's born in like 98.
Oh my God! Yeah, when they start getting into the 2000s, that's when I'm just going to quit and go cry in a hole. But yeah, he's on the roster. We're definitely going to see him play. I think the question now is whether he starts or not. He can play out wide. I think one of the interesting things with the roster that came out, when they announced it, they announced goalkeepers and then defenders and then midfielders/forwards all in the same group. And I think that's very much how Klinsmann sees the team, as a sort of free-flowing, midfielders switching positions with forwards, especially if you play a 4-4-3. Where you have a bunch of different midfielders and forwards kind of interchanging and kind of just pure chaos on the field. And, when it works. And I think you have guys who play a lot of different positions. So, yeah, we're definitely going to see him. He's going to get a lot of time. Is he going to start every game? I don't know, but I would not be surprised if he starts at least one, maybe two or three.
Awesome. One of my favorite things that you guys do on American Soccer Now is the ASN 100. So it basically ranks the top 100 U.S. players. And I perpetually make bad bets off that all the time. And I don't mean like physically I bet on things, because that's gambling is bad for sports. It's illegal and it's wrong. You shouldn't do it unless it's DraftKings. But I'm an Arsenal fan. So I'll have you know, I bought the new U.S. jersey and have Zalalem on the back. I had to guess a number. So am I going to be able to use that in the next 4 years? Are we going to see him at the World Cup? And I know he's not on this roster, but am I too excited about that?
It seems like he has regressed just a little bit. I don't want to crush your spirits. We'll get to the
No,
positive.
not Julian Green regress though.
No, well, and now Julian Green, he was back in this transition camp. So Julian Green is not on the roster either, but he has sort of worked himself back into the fold on the national team. You know, I think we get really excited about these guys, and then, you know, it's kind of like a hot hitter in baseball or something where they sort of regress to the mean, or, you know, we get really excited, especially the Americans. We all get really excited about these young guys, and it's because they've had a great season or a great couple games or whatever. And then, you know, we forget that they're 17 or 18 or 19 or whatever, and that it's hard to be a 17 or 18 or 19-year-old, and then also be a professional athlete. And, you know, I think it takes these guys some time to just sort of figure it out. There's also a little bit of that, you know, when you're the new guy, teams don't know how to defend you. And then the question is, once teams figure out how to defend you, do you have something that second move or something like that? And I think, you know, we saw Julian Green sort of float around for a while, and, you know, maybe being making the World Cup team got to his head. Maybe that goal he scored off his shin that everyone got really excited about got to his head. I don't know, but it seems like he has, in the past couple of months, sort of picked it up again. I think Gideon Salem is sort of, he's in a similar place. He needs to, you know, he was very good. He got a lot of praise. He had, you know, guys in Atlanta buying his jersey, making up numbers.
Yes.
You know, and then struggled a little bit with the loan, but there's certainly a lot of talent there. He certainly, you know, has the vision and has the ability to do it. I think he just needs a little time to mature.
So in other words, yes, I made the right decision, and he's going to take us to the World Cup in 2 years. Got it. Awesome.
Definitely.
Thank you. Okay, let's start going. I know it's a little weird to go. It's not like this is the World Cup. Like going group by group is a little maybe not ideal, but you know whatever. I've got a wall chart on my kid's room that he on my wall on the kid's wall that he's very excited to get marked with a magic marker every day. So we're going to go through here, starting with Group D and finish with the U.S. In the last one in Group A. Group D is Argentina, Chile, Panama, and Bolivia. I was looking through the FIFA rankings, which, you know, they have their own issues. But Bolivia, I think, is the worst team in this tournament in the FIFA rankings. Is this an obvious Argentina, Chile advance?
I think it's definitely it's Argentina's group to win. I think they're, you know, clearly the best team in the tournament, especially when you look at a Brazil team that's a little bit split because some of their players are going to Rio to play in the Olympics. I guess we can get there when we talk about that group. But yeah, and Chile is the obvious second place team there as well. I believe they won in 2015. They won the Copa America. They're a good team. They're a fun team. I think those two teams should do it. Yeah.
Okay, all right. We'll go to Group C, Mexico, Uruguay, Jamaica, and Venezuela. What is the state of the Mexican team right now? I always feel like there's always some sort of massive drama going on with them. Have they settled down? What's going on with them right now?
There's always massive drama. That's the fun part.
Yeah.
I think they have settled down a little bit. They fired their coach recently and, you know, figured it out a little bit. They're still having, you know, they have some weird things with guys who got called up who didn't want to go to the Copa America. They're still, you know, a dangerous team. I think they'll be okay in the tournament. I think they'll get a lot of home support as well. And I think they're, you know, like the US, I think they want to prove that they can play with these Central American powerhouses.
This is actually a general question about the tournament. It's, you know, I've been talking about this tournament as if everybody's bringing their A squads, and of course, no one's bringing. This is not like they're not bringing like the lower level teams. But you know, are there teams that are more bringing like the U.S. is obviously bringing the best squad it can. Brazil, you talk about being split. Is that something to keep in mind? Is this the best Argentina team? Are we going to see that? Are there teams that are not bringing their best guys? Are there great players that we will be expecting to see that we won't see?
I think for the most part, other than Brazil, which is going to miss Neymar, who's going to play, you know, for the Olympic team in Rio, which is an under-23 tournament with three overage guys. Most teams are bringing their, you know, A minus squads. I think the question is, you know, how much are the teams going to care potentially is sort of probably the bigger question. Obviously, there's no way to know that. And, you know, guys are not going to come out and say, well, you know, we're just going to the US for vacation for 3 weeks. But, you know, I think after the first game, you're kind of going to be able to tell how into it this is. I mean, you know, it's a big tournament. It's not the World Cup. And I think there are, you know, there's certainly the potential for, especially if a team, you know, has a bad result in the first game to kind of not try as hard as you might. The soccer season is very long, and this is, you know, in a lot of guys' cases, this is technically their vacation. So,
they need to amuse me during their vacation. They need to enjoy their vacation. We'll look at Group B. That is Brazil, Ecuador, which I think at the time everyone will be listening to this tonight, the U.S. has a friendly against Ecuador, Haiti, and Peru. This, to me, looks – Haiti and Peru seem like obviously a lot worse than those two teams.
Yes, definitely. They are a lot worse. That is correct. I think I don't think Haiti is going to do very well. I don't think Peru is going to do particularly well too. Ecuador is certainly a wild card. We will see, some of how good they are based on how they do tonight against the U.S. I think that'll be a good tune-up for both the teams, actually.
All right, then we go to Group A: USA, Colombia, Costa Rica, and Paraguay. Colombia currently is the fourth best team in the world, according to the FIFA rankings. When you look, that's the first game of the whole tournament on June 3rd in Santa Clara. Is there a fear, like, is that maybe not ideal for, would you rather play maybe Paraguay in that first game? Do you want to, like, is it for a team that's a little wary right now, and they're still kind of figuring themselves out, and this is a tournament that obviously people want to help promote in the United States, is it a worry playing one of the best teams of the tournament in the first game in prime time with everybody watching?
I think you probably want a little bit easier game. I think ideally you'd probably actually want to play Costa Rica first, because I think the U.S. is familiar with Costa Rica and good at beating Costa Rica in the U.S. That Colombia team, though, it's a weird team. A lot of that ranking has to do with how well they did the 2014 World Cup. They've kind of struggled since then. They scored they scored one goal in the 2015 Copa America. They're a good team. Clearly, they have a lot of talent. But I don't think that they're as good as their ranking is, and I don't think that they're as good as a lot of casual fans think, simply because most casual fans will probably only remember them from their exploits in the World Cup.
Okay, like me, for example. So do you think the U.S. can get out of that group? Do you think they can win that group? You think they'll get out of the group? Do you think they can win it?
I think they can definitely get out of it. I think, they should beat Costa Rica. Costa Rica is another team that had a really good 2014 World Cup, but, is not, they're not a great team. And like I said, the U.S., routinely beats them in World Cup qualifying at home and also on the road. So they should win that. I don't think that the Paraguayan team is particularly good either. They're ranked 39th in the world. They're 50-1 odds to win the tournament. They did make the semifinals of the 2015 Copa, but that was a little bit of an aberration. They're really young. They have, 12 of their 20 outfield players have fewer than 15 caps. So they're going to be trying to figure it out too. And then, like we talked about Colombia is good, but Colombia is certainly beatable. You could, I think reasonably expect the U.S. could hold on for a draw there. And then, I think a lot of people are looking at this group and thinking U.S. and Colombia 1-2. Like I said earlier, you really want to win the group to avoid what's likely a matchup against Brazil in the quarterfinals.
Is there an excitement level of, the Copa America is a pretty cool tournament, and it's in the United States this year, and the USA gets to play in it, and that's probably not going to happen again, maybe for another 100 years, who knows. Is there an excitement to, should we be more excited about the US even getting to be a part of this tournament than maybe we are?
I mean, I'm biased. I think it's going to be great. I think it's super cool. It's basically, essentially half a World Cup in the U.S. Over the summer. I think that's great. And it's all over the country, so it's not, you can get to a game, although tickets are sort of ridiculously expensive. So there's that conversation. But I think it's going to be really fun to have the U.S. playing in this and all these great players playing in the tournament in the U.S. I think it is too bad. We talked a little bit earlier about how the tournament kind of almost didn't happen and it was very unclear. I think that sort of set back the branding and the marketing and a little bit of the excitement level for the whole thing. You don't have 2 summers worth of build up. You have 6 weeks or whatever, or 6 months. And I think that certainly hurt it. I think the Olympics in Rio are a little bit, on the negative side as well. It's sort of another big event. There's also the Euros, the European Championships, which is another huge soccer event going on. I think, there's certainly a lot of American soccer fans who, watch European club soccer all the time. So there's that excitement as well. I think this is great. I think it's going to be really fun. It'd be great to see the U.S. do well. It's certainly not, the U.S. hosting the World Cup, but it's as close as we're going to get, and I think if nothing else, that makes it pretty exciting.
When you look at all the venues for for these games: Santa Clara, Orlando, Seattle, Pasadena, Chicago, Glendale, Orlando. Oh, we've said them all already. East Rutherford, Philadelphia, Foxborough. Is there a place where you're particularly excited to see how that place pulls it off? Like, obviously, we've talked about Seattle is one of. I'm actually going to be at a Seattle Sounders game this summer, and I'm very, very excited. Is there a venue that you're particularly excited to see how maybe step up to the scale of one of these games?
I think the Orlando venue would be really cool. I think, you know, this is their second year in Major League Soccer, Orlando City, and they've had a really tremendous fan base, support base. Everyone's wearing purple. It's very, very cool. But I think to see them, see that city, which you don't particularly think of as a sports city. I don't think you really think of many places in Florida as sports cities. You know, to see the passion that those fans have, I think will be, you know, kind of a cool thing for a lot of the rest of the country that doesn't have any idea about Orlando City FC and, you know, the crowds that they've been drawing and the excitement that they've had. So I think that'll be really cool.
All right. And the last thing I want to ask you now, walking away from Copa America, because obviously America's going to win and it's all going to be great. Let's go back. I think part of the reason that people are I have this sense that people are more nervous about the U.S. is, you know, it wasn't that long ago where, like very recently, where we were watching the U.S. play a World Cup qualifier game through the skin of our teeth. Like going into that Guatemala game, obviously U.S. was favored to win that. But people, I think, were so freaked out by that loss to Guatemala that listen, to not qualify to the hex would be a disaster of massive proportions, but they're in really good shape now, right? Like the next games are in September. They seem to have generally dodged that bullet by taking care of Guatemala in the second game, right?
Yeah, they should be fine. I think they have a game against Trinidad and Tobago at home, which they should win.
And as long as they win that, they should be fine. No matter what happens when they play. They play St. Vincent and the Grenadines. That's right.
Right, exactly. So they have sort of that, they have that buffer against St. Right. Vincent too. I mean, they're certainly, you know, by no means through the gauntlet, but you look at that game and, I mean, if they can't beat Trinidad, they don't deserve to make it anyway, you know, which is a sort of an argument that falls in on itself, but it is, you know, I do think, and it's the same thing with the Guatemala game. I mean, I was never particularly nervous about them getting out because if they failed that miserably, like they don't deserve to be there anyway.
All right. Well, no. Will you be going to any games during the Copa? Are you going to be traveling? Do you know which games you're going to? Or are you going to any?
I am. I'm actually going to France for the Euros for the first half for the group stage. So tough life there. And then I'll be back for the knockout round. So hopefully the U.S. is still around and get to a couple of those games.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited. I'm very excited. I said, I got my wall chart. I got my Zlalem. I got my Zlalem jersey that everyone will. I was hoping at least he would make the travel for it, but that's okay. I'm going to hang on, and in 2 years, when he scores the winning goal in Russia to win the World
Cup,
there
you go. He'll be back.
Yeah, well, he's wearing the wrong number because I just had to guess on a number. It'll work out great. Noah, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I'm very excited about this. I'll probably be bugging you a lot during this tournament, so I at least over Twitter. So I appreciate your time.
Definitely. Can't wait.
Of course, everyone make sure to follow Noah on Twitter at Noah E. Davis. And of course, check out America Soccer Now if you're not already. It is an awesome site. Everyone, we'll be back next week with my interview with Ezra Edelman, the director of OJ Made in America, which is terrific and awesome. And we need to try to get a screener for Noah on his flight to Europe because that would be pretty much the perfect way for him to spend a transcontinental flight. Otherwise, please rate and review us on iTunes. The music is by the Sundogs. We'll be back next week with Ezra Edelman. Have a great Memorial Day, everyone. Be safe.